Hello there. This is Leonard Chamberlain with another episode of Direct Connect. I'm a managing partner with Archer, joined by fellow managing partner Steve Parker. Say hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
And newest team member to Archer, my good friend and former colleague at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Mr. Barry Coonley. Welcome, Barry.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Today's topic is the recently approved NERC-SIP 15-1. So much heralded after many years. We finally have a new numbered SIP standard, SIP 15, internal network security monitoring. So thank you to the commission. Thank you to the drafting team. Thank you to industry. We're excited to have a new set of standards to help ensure the reliability of the bulk electric system. So, essentially, FERC ordered this a number of years ago. When was that? 2023, maybe?
Yes.
So, in the realm of standards development, pretty good turnaround as far as when it was originally ordered and when we're receiving it. Of course, we've got a number of years in the implementation time frame, so as is kind of par for the course with NERC-SIP, by the time the standard is enforceable, it will be many, many years after it was originally ordered. Before we get into some specific parts of the standard, I'm just curious, Barry, Steve, if y'all have anything you want to say on the front end about SIP 15?
Yeah, well, to echo your comments, Leonard, it did. The development process was relatively quick compared to others we've seen. The implementation timeline is, to be honest, a bit disappointingly long, but I think you do have to recognize that there's potentially a lot of work that's going to go into this. So I don't think it's unreasonable. Just seems certainly amongst the longer. I think the SIP version 5, version 6 transition was probably about the same, maybe slightly under 3 years, all said and done. And that involved a very heavy lift on a number of new requirements. So there should definitely be enough time to get this done. I think we're looking at 3 years for control centers and an additional 2 for the field. So we're at 2030. We'll be in a whole new decade before we get this implemented and enforceable. It'll still be less time than it took for virtualization, though, which is still not approved. So we'll see. So, yeah, that's my initial thoughts. I'm looking forward to hearing Barry's thoughts, and we'll dive into some of the details here and talk about how we're going to get it done.
Yeah. Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah, so I'll take over. So I was actually the person at FERC that started this whole thing about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago now, asking the commission to create an order for internal network security monitoring, because I saw that there was a gap that existed, as well as a number of folks in the industry and at the commission as well. So fortunately, I feel it was an order that passed, and I think well needed, because it's keeping at par with the rest of the industry as far as internal network security monitoring. It was almost a given where if you're deploying a security controls, you're going to be monitoring inside of your network, not just the perimeter, which was the case prior to this order being filed. So I want to talk a little bit about the timeline as well, and you'd like to get your folks' thought on that also. And I know you talked about it, Steve, and a little bit, Leonard. So we have 3 years for the control centers, for that's high and medium with ERC only, and it's all high. So if it has ERC or if it doesn't have ERC, it doesn't matter. And to be honest, I can't recall seeing a control center without ERC, but we don't know if they do exist, right? So it's all control centers for high. Medium control centers with ERC only, and then as Steve pointed out, out in the field, you have an additional 2 years, so that's 2030. But the original order called out the SIP network environment, which there was a lot of confusion about that in the standard drafting team when that first standard was drafted, FSIP 15-1, and they ended up leaving out ECOMs and PACs. And that's why the second order, 907, was filed recently, where it actually added ECOMs and PACs to that environment now as well. So the timeline that was discussed, the 3 years and 5 years, is for the current SIP 15-1. And there is another year that NERC has to modify the standard to implement ECOMs and PACs. What ECOMs and PACs addition actually does it end up looking like? It's unclear yet, because I'm sure that the standard drafting team is going to debate how that works and, you know, what aspects exist in that environment. But we do know that there will be some component of ECOMs and PACs that must be included for SIP 15-2 when it finally comes out. And I'm not sure what that timeline will be, how that's going to work once that is filed. Any thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, you would think it shouldn't take that long. You just add ECOMs and PACs to the requirement language and you're done. But no, I'm sure there will be some other jockeying of verbiage that needs to occur. No, I agree with you. I think that certainly an oversight on the part of the drafting team to exclude those. I mean, certainly an integral part of the network. The idea of a concept that's not well defined in NERC SIP, that's never happened. You know, there's several things in here. Anomalous is one that comes to mind, and is something that could be the subject of many future heated debates at audit time, because not a NERC defined term. I think FERC was very clear in its original order what it considered to be activity that needed to be monitored, and then anomalous traffic is what was introduced in the standard. I believe the implementation guidance makes it clear what the standard drafting team's intent is behind that verbiage, but as some of us know all too well, implementation guidance is not enforceable. So until it's in the NERC glossary of terms or in the requirement language itself, it's, I don't know, be careful what you hang your hat on. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I have a thought on that letter on the SIP network environment. You know, one thing that comes to mind is the challenge in defining that is that ECOMs and PACs currently are not required to be in a electronic security perimeter or any other defined network environment. In a sense, I could see, you know, if I was at a utility, I would probably say, you know what, we are going to define a protected network, a defined network zone, and we're going to protect it, and we're going to put our ECOMs and our PACs in there, and that's going to define the boundary that we need to do our monitoring for. Of course, they're not required to be in an ESP because of the Hall of Mirror effect that has been talked about, where under previous versions, it was not clear whether a firewall as an ECOMS needed to be in an ESP itself, which meant you had to have another firewall, which would have been an ESP. And, you know, that Hall of Mirrors effect where you get an infinite loop. But on the other hand, having ECOMS and PACs just sitting out on an unprotected corporate network isn't necessarily the best situation. So I'm interested in your thoughts, you know, Barrett and Leonard, whether this might actually either directly in the next version of the standards or indirectly through implementation approaches result in those devices now going into a protected zone of some sort. So we can isolate them and identify what we need to monitor.
No, that's a really interesting point there, Steve. As you mentioned, while ECOMs and PACs can be protected within an ESP, they're not required to be explicitly like BES Cyber Systems and PCAs. Presumably, they're being protected to similar standards wherever they live. But it would be very interesting to see if the interpretation of this SIP networked environment kind of supersedes our previous approaches as far as these types of devices.
With Order 907, FERC defined or expanded what that definition of SIP network environment means. And I interpreted the order to be pretty clear that it is ECOMs and PACs. And the reason I'm saying it that way is I was at a number of standard drafting teams meetings, and there was a lot of discussion wrapped around pulling in corporate assets as well, because, you know, as we all know, some of those ECOMs and PACs environments sit in those, are kind of intermingled with corporate assets as well. So that was a big concern. The way I read the order, there shouldn't really be a concern. There should be a way to be able to segment out that traffic to make sure that it's only including assets that fall under the CIPR liability standards. And it gives the entity a lot of latitude on how to determine where they want to put those sensors and how they put those sensors in order to get the coverage necessary in order to meet a good cybersecurity control. And I'm going to springboard off of what I just said there. Is the SIP standard, SIP 15, doesn't come out and say you need to have seven sensors or you need to have one sensor on every single switch or something along those lines. It allows the entity to make that decision what that security control covers and the protection that they deem necessary for that environment. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Risk-based rationale. How wonderful to have risk-based criteria returned to the standards requirement language. Let's hope it doesn't go the way that SIP 2-1 did. I think it's probably appropriate to allow some latitude for entities to determine, you know, the most optimal points on their network, but it almost implies a requirement that will at least be asked about, if not, you know, some evidence expected at audit time, is how did you determine where on your network you're going to monitor, which devices, which segments, VLANs, et cetera. Demonstrating that rationale for that risk-based analysis. It's not explicitly there, but I think it's pretty easy to get to that conclusion that an auditor would expect evidence of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Whatever the entity does, they're going to have to show that evidence exists for that determination of why they placed the sensors where they did. I think going in and putting one sensor inside of an ESP and one sensor in an ECOMS and one sensor in a PACS probably won't cut the mustard in this case because, you know, that really isn't a risk-based approach, in my opinion, unless, of course, you only have like three devices maybe in that environment. It might make sense to only have one sensor. But I'm pretty sure that all of us recognize that there's more than three devices usually in these environments. So they're going to have to, the entity is definitely going to have to show how they came up with the determination of where to put those sensors and how they're monitoring that traffic to give them the best coverage.
Yeah, so my take on this, a couple of questions or observations on this. One is the, you know, in terms of scope of coverage, I assume that the intent, I read the intent to be that all network traffic traversing those internal networks is accounted for. I don't believe that the intent was to require a full packet capture of all network traffic. But you mentioned putting one sensor in. You know, the number of sensors, I assume, would be drawn or driven by the scope of the network and the physical layout of the network and how many sensors you need to achieve full coverage. But I think you would need to have full coverage of the network traffic. Not necessarily full packet capture, but at least accounting for the connections and the devices that are communicating in some way, shape, or form, whether it's NetFlow data or an IDS monitoring all the traffic, capturing full packet captures, anywhere in between. I think it's the flexibility is there for the entities to decide exactly how to do that. But would you both agree that all traffic flowing in that environment needs to be accounted for in whatever approach you take to monitor it?
I concur with that statement.
Yeah. So let me just kind of expand on that. That was not me barking. So let me expand on that. So during several of the standard drafting team meetings, which I participated in for SIP 15-1, that conversation actually took place. And some of the examples that were used were, say you have a switch and you have, you know, 20 hosts coming off of that switch. And those hosts are maybe engineering or something that's, we'll say that it's a PCA. It's not a best cyber system or a best cyber asset, right? So does it make sense to have a sensor on that switch at that access level to capture all the traffic going between all those hosts? Or would it make more sense to have that traffic captured at maybe the distribution switch going to that access switch instead of capturing all the communications going between each one of those hosts? So the outcome ended up being that the discussion was it made more sense typically to have that sensor located at that distribution side switch instead of capturing all the traffic going between each one of those hosts. So you just overwhelm the system with that traffic. I was fine with that approach when I was listening in and participating in that standard drafting team meeting. It made a lot of sense. I would like to have your folks' thoughts on that. You know, where you see, you know, case situations like that where maybe putting it at the distribution switch rather than at an access switch makes more sense.
I think there's a risk there that you miss some of the communications between those devices. So if you had, you know, in your example, three devices on an access switch somewhere, and you're only capturing the traffic that flows up to or down from the distribution switch, you can miss some activity. Now, trying to capture all of that can be burdensome, and there might be other ways like NetFlow data you may be able to pass up or whatnot. So I guess that's where the flexibility comes in. And back to my comments on should all traffic be accounted for, maybe in some situations it's not really feasible or practical to account for every packet, but I don't think you can completely ignore the communications between those devices because that is an internal network that should be monitored. So maybe that's something for implementation guidance down the road to figure out, you know, what is actually practical when we start deploying this.
Yeah, I think part of it goes back to, you know, what are you trying to defend against? If it's, you know, that pivot point to compromise, you know, potentially higher value targets upstream. Then the distribution switch scenario makes more sense. If it's, you know, the trying to capture, you know, phone home type communications, then, you know, again, distribution. But as y'all are pointing out, that isn't a full, you know, holistic capture of that local device-to-device potential communication path.
Yeah. And the order doesn't specifically state, to your point earlier, Steve, when you're saying about full packet capture or NetFlows or, you know, just maybe the metadata going across it, the order never said you shall capture, unless I missed it, you shall do PCAP throughout your entire environment, right? It gave, the entity a lot of latitude to determine what makes sense for their environment. Because at the end of the day, the point is they want to be able to detect lateral movement of malicious activity, right? Or suspicious activity in that environment. So that's the intent, right?
To be fair, it doesn't say not to do that.
That is true, yes.
So, yeah, I guess the question is, what part of the requirement does the risk-based rationale apply towards? Does it apply to where you are capturing this data, or does it apply to the data that you are capturing, or both?
I imagine you could do endpoint logging if you had endpoint protection on devices and those endpoint software products were monitoring the network traffic to and from a device and could alert up on suspicious activity. That perhaps would count. What do you think about that?
It looks like you want to say something, Leonard.
my comment would be, can you say that again, Steve?
Oh, I was referring to the use of endpoint protection to monitor the network traffic locally at each device. That would assure that you get full coverage, and then you know, having alerts coming out of the sensors basically on every endpoint, or maybe not every endpoint, but a select endpoints as one approach to monitoring the network traffic, as opposed to monitoring it at a switch, for example.
Yeah. That's a technique. No, I think again, there's a lot of latitude in how this is approached, right? And so that would certainly cover maybe that local device to device aspect, while still giving you the latitude to do something more general network based upstream. Again, this all assumes that you've got some type of central monitoring to, crank through all this data. This is a huge amount to have to go manually review. Obviously, it would be just a snapshot, a sampling of data, not humanly possible to review the amount of traffic that's going to be captured here. So we haven't talked about AI yet, but it's going to be interesting to see what kind of AI-based solutions come to market to assist with these requirements.
So I completely agree with both of you gentlemen as far as the endpoint side of things, and there's a lot of latitude again within even the way the SIP 15-1 is written and the order. It all comes down to how the entity shows and presents their evidence, right? To show that they are actually performing an internal network security monitoring type approach, right? So one of the discussions that we had during the standard drafting team that I recall, if I'm recalling it correctly, was to your point, Steve and Leonard, with the endpoint detection, that maybe that could be the substitute. And the one concern that came up was the difference between endpoint detection and network capture, right, is network capture doesn't lie. Whatever is capturing is always truthful, meaning that you can't manipulate. It could be manipulated coming across the wire, but you're capturing whatever is coming across the wire unchanged, right? They're not able to do that. Unlike an endpoint, where if someone does compromise an endpoint, they may have the ability to manipulate how that traffic is leaving that endpoint. I'm not saying it's an easy thing to do. However, there is that nuance between that aspect as well. But going back to my original statement is the entity can show that endpoint detection is meeting the order and the standard. I don't see why an endpoint detection would not work if they have good evidence to show that.
Yeah. Good point on the endpoints being compromised. Another thought I'll throw out there for you to get your opinion on. What about software-defined networking? So in a perfect deployment of software-defined networking, you are not allowing for any anomalous network activity because anything that is required is explicitly allowed. I don't know if you can get to that theoretically perfect deployment, but is there anything that SDN might be able to do to help with this standard? What are your thoughts?
I'll jump in on that one because Leonard's pausing because I love SDN. So I absolutely think that SDN would be a great benefit to internal network security monitoring deployment, keeping in mind that typically SDN doesn't have that anomalous detection from a malicious activity perspective like an IDS or an IPS, right? So you would have to pair that with that detection, unless I'm missing something here. But from a baselining and understanding your network and controlling your network flows, SDN is perfect. But also to your point, Steve, you're going to have to configure it properly. And I'm not sure the level of it's a little more difficult to set up an SDN network than it is to just plug in a switch, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll piggyback on that and just say, I think not that obviously the standard's not written to prohibit that approach, but I think it's written presuming that you're going to have physical devices to monitor or at least generate the traffic from, right? So thinking about how not only the implementation side works, but what evidence you're going to generate for the auditors to validate, regardless of how you implement it, you still have to comply with these requirements. So still on the hook for demonstrating INSM.
Yeah, and there is a baselining component to the SIP standard as well. You have to understand your network before you deploy it. You're going to have to present that evidence to the auditor, how you determine what that baseline looks like. And they didn't use the term baseline. I can't remember what term they actually used, but essentially that's what you need to do. You need to baseline your network prior to deploying your sensors.
I don't know if this is the most important topic, but I feel like we should lay down the gauntlet for industry, because I can't tell you how many times I hear ridiculous pronunciation of acronyms that are completely wrong. And so what are we going to call these damn things? You know, INSM, INSMs, INIMS, because if we don't go ahead and, you know, lay down the law, somebody else will. So what do we think these should be?
I'm going to abstain from this one. I just like INSM.
I don't know, Leonard. I think before we worry about that, we should come up with a name for the low impact electronic access control devices, which are still suffering from the withdrawal of the LEAP definition. So,
oh, you know my position on that. All the low impact specific verbiage is ridiculous. It should just be ESPs, PSPs. We got perfectly good definitions and glossary of terms. It's just different applicable systems.
Here, I was going to propose an electronic security zone for the ECOMS and PACS devices to go along with the physical security zones for low impact. But topic for another, yep. Another direct connect, perhaps.
Indeed. Well, jokes aside, no, this has been a very, very informative chat. So I appreciate you gentlemen making the time to discuss SIP 15 today. For everyone watching, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Direct Connect. We'll see you next time with another exciting episode. So take care.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you, Leonard.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook and Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.